There we go.
House Committee on Energy and Environment will come to order. Thank you, colleagues, for your flexibility on this snowy day and meeting a little bit early. And thank you to all the people who have modified their schedules in order to be here. We have one and exactly one item on our agenda today. I will announce that House Bills 4107, 4041, HJM 201 will be heard on Tuesday, February 11th. And today we will be dealing solely with House Bill 4126, so we'll go ahead and open a public hearing. House Bill 4126. I'd like to call up Representative Smith, please. And if Mark Mayer from Legislative Council would care to join him, and Ms. Hoffman, if she's available.
Thank you. Sorry.
Representative, please.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. That was almost like Congress. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith, representing District 57. Thank you so much for allowing this hearing to occur in this blustery day. It's kind of funny because where I come from, when you look outside, we call this October. But we're glad to be here, and we want to make this very quick. Chair Bailey, members of the committee, what's before you represents the hard work of over 20 different organizations. And just very quickly, very quickly, they represent Umatilla Electric Cooperative, Central Electric Cooperative, the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association, the Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association, Renewable Northwest Project, the Northwest Energy Coalition, Idaho Power, Pacific Power, Pacific General Electric, Eugene Water and Electric Board, the Industrial Customers of Northwest Utilities, Association of Oregon Counties, Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, Bonneville Power Administration, the People's Utility District Association, Public Utility Commission, and the Oregon Department of Energy. But most importantly, we receive leadership from the Governor's Office to help bring this bill forward. And Chair Bailey, we want you to know how much we appreciate your leadership in allowing this conversation to occur. There's two pieces to this legislation. There's a Part A and a Part B. And if it'd be all right, Chair, I'd like you in a moment to toss this over to Legislative Council to share with you those two pieces of the bill.
Sounds like a good idea.
But what I want everyone to know is when we first started this process, we literally could not get folks to even look at each other in the eye. We could not get them to shake hands, and at times there was contentious conversation. But through continued dialogue, by everyone agreeing to work together, to work to the middle, and to work in what I would call the Oregon way, we were able to reach consensus. And so if it'd be all right, Mr. Chair, after some brief words from the governor, it'd be great if we could have Legislative Council walk through the bill.
Sounds like an excellent plan. Ms. Hoffman.
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 4126 today. My name is Margie Hoffman. I am the Energy Policy Advisor for Governor John Kitzhaber. I want to just say one word, ditto. And I really want to thank Representative Smith for his leadership on this issue, and you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for sticking with us and allowing us the space to come together and figure out a consensus proposal that we can bring before you today. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And before we go to Legislative Council, and at the risk of making this a love fest, I have to chime in and thank you, Representative, and thank you, Ms. Hoffman, on behalf of the governor, for the collaboration here. And I know that even as recently as, a month ago or so, there were some question marks about whether or not this plane was going to be able to be landed. And I think it was only because we had a couple of able pilots on board guiding it. And I really want to thank you for your hard effort and your willingness to trust, to have a conversation and to work hard. And although you two are sitting here and I'm thanking you, that thanks goes to everybody that's sitting in the audience that's worked really hard on this. I apologize that because of the scheduling, we won't have a chance to have everybody come up and talk. I'm sure that probably makes some of you happy, maybe all of you happy, makes us happy. But but I think really the credit goes to all of you, because if I thought that there was going to be a deal on this, I did not think that there was going to be possible to be a deal on this, and you guys pulled it off, all of you. So thank you. Mr. Mayor, could you care to walk us through Parts A and B briefly?
Thank you, Chair Bailey, Vice Chair Johnson, Vice Chair Boone. I'm Mark Mayer from Legislative Council. The bill is introduced is what has been called Part A. And that is the piece that addresses a consumer-owned utility that becomes subject to the large renewable portfolio standard. And basically what this brief bill does on its face is allow a consumer-owned utility that becomes subject to that standard to use a greater portion of renewable energy certificates to meet their obligations under the standard for a period of time. Basically, it allows them to use up to 100% when they're at a 5% obligation. 5% of their energy has to come from renewable sources, and they can use 75% of the certificates when 15 and 20% of their energy has to come from renewable sources. At the time that they have to meet the full standard, the full 25%, then the allowances in this bill are cut off, and they're subject to the same standard as any other utility that under the current law. So that's the first part. And that was drafted to help mitigate the process of becoming subject to the large standard. The one other important part of that is there is a caveat. If a consumer-owned utility does take over without the consent of a private-owned utility, that private-owned utility's land or a portion of their land, then they will no longer have these allowances. So that's the one caveat there. The Dash 3 amendments right here, which don't change the underlying bill at all, basically have to do with allowing non-residential customers of electric companies or public utilities that sell and distribute electricity to voluntarily enter into an agreement or a tariff with the company that would allow them to purchase at a higher rate renewable energy. The best example I can give of that in our own daily lives is we could all currently purchase power at a green power rate from PGE or PacifiCorp, whoever we buy our power from, and this would operate in much the same way. There are a couple of key components to this bill that you should look at. The first one is that there are intelligible principles that guide the offering of these particular tariffs. The Public Utility Commission must consider these intelligible principles both before allowing any tariff to be filed and then at the time of the filing of any individual tariff. And that's probably important. So they're looking at both before allowing the program to be put into place, then at the same time on an individual basis.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Do those include consumer protection principles?
Yes, they do. In fact, I think three of the intelligible principles are basically written specifically for consumer protection purposes.
Thank you.
Do you want me to just go through those very briefly?
Yes, just very briefly. That would be excellent.
All right. I'll just shift down to the one that's on the bottom of the page. I'll just mention it very briefly, which is they have to consider any direct or indirect impact, including any potential cost shifting on other customers. So if there's going to be cost shifting to other customers by allowing for these things, it's going to, basically, they're not going to allow the tariff. And that is also written specifically on page 2 of the amendment. In the middle of subsection 4, you will see all costs and benefits associated with the voluntary renewable energy tariff shall be borne by the non-residential customer receiving service under the tariff. So it is a mandate in this bill that if you elect to receive these services, you're going to be paying for the additional cost of them. And that is part 3 in a nutshell. There were some statements that a party requested Representative Smith to read, and
Representative, would you care to get some clarifications here on the record?
Thank you, Chair Bailey. Colleagues, like any good peace accord, there's a few statements we need to get read onto the record, if that would be all right.
Please.
All right. The first one represents a commitment that was made about a week ago. It's regarding Section 3, Part 4 of the proposed amendment to House Bill 4126. This ensures that each customer that chooses a renewable energy tariff will pay all of the costs related to its participation. It is the intent of this amendment that a renewable energy tariff will result in no cross-subsidization between customers that belong to different rate schedules. Second, This is another commitment. The renewable energy tariff is not intended to raise any issues surrounding the public purpose charge. This amendment and any resulting renewable energy tariff will not result in any increase in the public purpose charge. Third, this is subsection 5 clarification. Because there are no commission rules that cite directly to ORS 757.646, I would like to clarify that the purpose of Section 5 is only to explicitly state that direct access rules do not prohibit the adoption of a renewable energy tariff, not to prevent the application of the consumer protections under those rules to a green tariff. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I needed to get those on the record.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I assume all that is accurate in a technical reading of this amendment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, those are accurate statements.
Questions for this panel? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, perhaps you could give us, Mr. Mayor, the background of the original reason we need this Section 3. Why do we need it? There was a prohibition against entering into a tariff of this nature, and I just wanted to go back to the historical reason for the need for this at this point. And that gives us...
Correct. That does involve... there is a section of law, 757-646, which mandates that the Public Utility Commission, in considering the distribution of electricity, eliminate barriers to competition. Although there are no... the Public Utility Commission has interpreted that in such a way over the past 10 years, as well as developed internal policies that would disallow for these types of agreements to be entered into. If you want a little bit more information on that internal, that reading of that statute, I would suggest that I think Jason Eisdorfer is here. He could come up and explain their own reasonable interpretation of that statute. So that is the specific purpose, to point to that law in sub 5 here and say, you can do this despite this other mandate, this other existing mandate. But at the same time, we try to craft language that would allow them to consider that mandate in conjunction with these other factors that they're looking at when they're approving the tariff. Is that satisfactory, Representative Benz?
Actually, it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Appreciate
your effort on this.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up Dave Markham, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Bailey and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Markham. I'm the president and CEO of Central Electric Cooperative, headquartered in Redmond, Oregon, and also the president of Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association, also a member of the task force. I made the drive over from Bend today. I'm pretty passionate about what this task force has done. That's why I was crazy enough to make the drive over, and I think there's a lot of qualified people out here that could have testified, and I got the sympathy nod for driving the longest. So I'll just take a couple minutes of your time just to make some comments. I figure about 1 mile per second I'll talk, but I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 4126, what it does, it allows more flexibility for compliance with the RPS, and the Oregon smaller consumer-owned utilities, if we become classified as a large utility because of large loads that come into our service territory, we're non-generating utilities, so this will give us some more flexibility with compliance. Now, the Oregon Electric Co-ops, I think you all know that the power that we receive comes from the BPA that we provide to our members, and again, we're non-generating utilities. And this power that we receive from the BPA is 96% carbon-free. And we've been leaders in the state historically from a standpoint of our investment in smaller renewable energy resources. CEC, Central Electric Cooperative. We're involved in the Coffin Butte landfill gas to electricity project near Corvallis. I don't know if you're all aware of that project, but it takes methane gas from decomposing garbage and it captures it, and we create a very environmental friendly source of electricity. Some co-ops are involved in a geothermal project. We're also involved with other co-ops in a wave energy project. And CEC, my co-op, we're also investigating moving into a community solar project as another option that we can provide to our members as far as renewable energy. And as I said, I served as a member of this task force, not only as a representative of ORACA, the president of the association, but as a CEO of an organization that we have several large data centers that are looking at coming into our region, and we have a couple data centers that are there right now. And I think you probably understand that keeping rates affordable for our members, it's a pretty high priority right now. And for many of our the areas that we serve, we still are facing double-digit unemployment rates. And so what we've been concerned about, meaning we as the co-ops, is the impacts that the RPS would have on small non-generating utilities such as Umatil Electric Cooperative, that they've grown dramatically in load size, but they haven't grown in actual size of members. UEC, they serve 10,000 members, but they're going to be classified as a large utility under the RPS in the same category as Pacific Power and Portland General Electric, that I believe have around 1.4 million customers between the two of them. And my co-op, as I just mentioned, could be in a very similar situation as Umatil Electric Cooperative in the near future, as we have more data centers that look at doing some construction. So just briefly, we had some really excellent analysis that was done by Oregon Department of Energy, and it was helpful because we could take real live data that Umatil Electric Cooperative has right now with their loads and model that, and it did show that there would be a significant impact on rates with especially in the early years for compliance with the renewable portfolio standard. And so the task force, what we did was we evaluated a range of alternatives that would address this rate shock, and we looked at how we could smooth the cost to consumers for compliance. And the task force, we ended up reaching consensus on a proposal that would, as I mentioned, allow the use by consumer-owned utilities that become large utilities of using more renewable energy certificates to become compliant. And the good thing about this is this compliance option in the agreement that we have here with House Bill 4126 would allow this ballot measure to go away. And I think that, and that's the ballot measure that's out there that would make all hydropower from the BPA be a qualified resource under the RPS. And we also reached consensus is on the task force to avoid any further disagreements on this RPS, and I think that's welcome news for everybody. I want to thank Representative Smith and Margie Hoffman, excellent leadership on that task force. Representative Smith constantly, every time we met, he urged us to come to the center, to be willing to give. And I think we saw that because if you took a look at the diversity on that task force, that was no easy task to come to agreement. And so there was a lot of passion surrounding the RPS, and I think everybody can understand that. But we were able to come together and come up with what I believe is a win-win situation for all. And I'd also like to thank Lisa Schwartz and Julie Peacock with Oregon Department of Energy. They did an excellent job with providing the ability to help us model real-life situations and do some analysis. And I'd like to end this just with saying I'd really urge the committee to support House Bill 4126. And I thank you for the opportunity to allow me to testify. I cut it short from my notes here because I know everybody's got things to do and get out of here before the storm really settles in, but I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Markham, and thank you for making the trip over here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Good.
Questions? Seeing none, right. We'll let you get back on the road.
Thank you.
You need to.
Yeah, what a quick turn.
Yeah. Okay. We see no one else signed up to testify on House Bill 4126. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4126. Open a work session on House Bill 4126. Rick, do we have the fiscal and revenue impact statements available?
Chair, yes, you do. On the dash 3, there is a minimal expenditure impact and a no revenue impact.
Thank you.
Chair Bailey, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendment stated 2514.
Vice Chair Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment stated 2514. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Johnson?
Chair Bailey, I move House Bill 26, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Johnson moves House Bill 4126 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will please call the roll.
Aye. Representative Weininger? Aye. Representative Bearden? Aye. Representative Smith Warner? Aye. Representative Baker Peterson? Aye. Representative Weiner? Excused. Representative Woodset? Aye. Co-Vice Chair Boone? Aye. Co-Vice Chair Johnson? Aye. Chair Bailey? Aye.
Motion carries. It's on its way to the floor. Representative Smith, would you care to carry this bill?
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Good work.
Good work to all. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4126. And see you on this committee on Tuesday. We're adjourned.
Carry over.